What we'll be doing in this year is explain a little bit importance of the whole union of spending so much time and energy and learning and talking about the whole union of Gimel Tammuz, that Yaakov Lomes and Moshe Lomes, what is accomplished so much by talking so much about it and explaining it so much and so on and so forth. First of all, in other words, even those who understand this and believe this, why is it necessary to emphasize it so much and talk about it so much, especially if it makes the normal people nervous? First of all, we know that whatever the Rebbe does, that's a hirah for us. And if you look back in the Sichas of Tavshin Yud, in other words, after Yud Shvat, we see this was what the Rebbe spoke about over and over. And at every possible opportunity, this is what the Rebbe emphasized in every Sicha, in every kind of situation, emphasized and brought out this inyan that the Rebbe is here and he's with us. So that alone, even if we understand what we gain by that, would be enough of a reason that we follow and we see that it's important. But nevertheless, let's look a little bit into the Sichas to understand what is gained and what we're accomplishing. We'll start with the Sicha of Achron Shel Pesach. It could be that everything that we're going to be talking about is already known, but perhaps just putting it all together and seeing it from that perspective will help us see it more clearly. The Sicha from the Rebbe, Achron Shel Pesach, Tavshin Yud Beis. And in that Sicha, it was Achron Shel Pesach, or pretty much at the end of the Fabrengen, and the Rebbe said that the Friedrich Rebbe, so the Rebbe says that the Friedrich Rebbe had eingeführt, means he arranged that there should be on Achron Shel Pesach a Mashiach Tanz, Mashiach Dance. So the Rebbe said these words, Mashiach Dance, can be interpreted two ways. One way is that it means a dance that has a shaykhis and is hakdomah to Mashiach. In other words, to dance in a way that it relates to Mashiach, it reminds us of Mashiach, and that schus will bring Mashiach. But we can also interpret it another way. Mashiach tanz means a dance that Mashiach himself is participating. He's there. Then the Rebbe says the following. The Baal des Estolien uns, the Mirvelm Teichen, being that it depends on us, the way we're going to interpret this, so we're going to interpret it in a way that it pays for us. The way that Eslein Sachuns, in other words, what we want better for ourselves. We're going to interpret it, Mashiach is already here, and that he's participating with us, and he's dancing together with us. And then the Rebbe spoke a little bit more, and then he concluded by saying that now everyone should sing Nezheritze Chlopzi and to dance with Mashiach. You should be the Simcha Gdela, Simcha Rabba. Everyone should picture in his face that Mashiach, who is higher than Adam Rishon, and he's higher than the others and Moshe Rabbeinu and everyone, he's here now and he's dancing with us. And then the Rebbe himself stood up and they were dancing for a very long time. So what we see here is a very interesting thing. The Rebbe says there's two ways to teach Mashiach Tanz. And the fact will depend on us, the way we interpret it. And if it depends on us, of course we're going to interpret it in a way that we would like it to be. Which way would we like it to be? That Mashiach is already here and he's dancing with us. What we see from here, we'll soon see a number of examples for this, and this is a very fundamental concept in Chassidus and Chassidus in general, that is that the Inyanim, the way they are, Lamaila, how it comes down to our world depends on us. The way we perceive it and the way we think of it, that will determine. It's not just a question, do I see it right or wrong? The way I see it, that will determine the way it's going to be. And therefore, the way we see this dance, That will determine if you see this there that Mashiach himself is here, then you'll have it. And if not, then you won't have it. What does that mean? That means the potential is there. And it depends on us. And if we see it as Mashiach is here, then Mashiach who is here will become Nizgala as Mashiach and be dancing with us. Otherwise, his presence as Mashiach, his identity as Mashiach will remain more hidden because in our minds and our perception, he's not here with us. I mean, similarly, we find that the Gemara says reference to a dream. Of course, now, I always have to give this introduction because people get nervous. The Rebbe tells us that now dreams are nothing. We shouldn't pay any attention to it and shouldn't get frightened from dreams. All it is just all the nonsense that goes on in our head or went on our head all the years. It's in the subconscious. It comes up. So today we don't really pay attention to dreams. Of course, unless it's a good dream, you can pay attention to it. But years ago, dreams were significant and meant something. To the extent, what? What's a dream? In the Gemara, it talks about dreams. In fact, in that Gemara that talks about all the signs of dreams, it gives a whole list. If you dream this, it means this. If you dream that, it means that. Then at the end, the Gemara says, and if you dream any of this tonight, it means nothing. Because we just talked about it, so that's why you're going to dream about it. So similarly, on the same principle, our dreams today don't mean anything. But in those days, the Gemara says like this, that when you hear a dream, it's important that you interpret it in a positive way. Because the way you interpret it, that's how that dream will be fulfilled. In fact, in those days, people used to go to a Beis Din, to three Rabbanim. They should do what we call a Tavas Cholim. Tavas Cholim means they should make the dream good. What do you think they did? How did they make the dream good? All they did was say, Chelma Tova Chazaisa. Your dream is a good dream. And they said it three times. And by saying that your dream is a good dream and interpreting it that way, that made the dream go in that direction. And if Chas V'Shalom, it could be pronounced the other way, that can cause the very same dream, which obviously in those days was some sort of a semblance of a prophecy, to be interpreted in a negative way. In other words, if there is any kind of dream that had any significance, in fact, that's what the Rebbe writes to people in their letters, don't worry about dreams. And if there's any like thing in your head that you're concerned about, so the Birchas Kahanim Tefillah that we say will already cancel any kind of negative power that a dream might have. In fact, we find the same with Nevuah also. In a number of sikhs, when the Rebbe would speak about Mashiach, the Rebbe would talk about the fact that there are Nevuahs, there are prophecies that when Mashiach will come, certain negative things will happen. And the Rebbe would always say that we should not focus on those prophecies and definitely not interpret them in the literal sense, because all those prophecies could be interpreted in a metaphoric way. One of the most known of those sikhs is the, because that's one of the things also about Misnagdim, whenever you talk about Mashiach, instead of being happy, they collapse because they start thinking about all the Rachman and Litzlan that are going to happen. I once heard a story from a woman, a Lubavitch woman, but she teaches in a different school, and she said that one time, I think it was during recess, and the school bell, or it was middle of a class, the school bell went off by mistake in the wrong time. It was a loud bell, started to ring, and all the kids jumped up. And one kid screamed out, Mashiach is here! You know, why else would the bell ring in the middle of the day? Anyway, after everyone calmed down, they sat down, the teacher addressed what this child said. And she said that this girl was very excited Mashiach is here. She said, do you think it's going to be such an exciting thing when Mashiach comes? Do you know what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? And she started to list all the brachas. So, Rahman al-Islam, I mean, if you really believe that, then this woman should stop davening. Because in the davening, you don't stop asking for Mashiach. And if it's such a terrible thing, then how do you daven? So obviously, it's a very confusing thing to some people. But first of all, Mashiach is brachas b'li gvul. If we find any kind of medrash or nevuah that says anything in the negative, then first of all, we don't know exactly what it means. Not everything is meant literal. And definitely our inyan is not to talk about it in a literal way, because in that way, the Rebbe says, you draw down that prophecy to Chas V'Shalom be that way. So I'm saying one of the most popular sikhs about this is where it says that before Mashiach comes, that for a brief moment, everyone will return to dust. It's also one of the things that they're petrified of. So the Rebbe says that it doesn't mean literally. Just like we say in davening, v'nafshi ka'ofor la'koyotia, we should be like dust. What does it mean? It means bittel. So bittel is, that means it's a ruchnizdika thing. In fact, the Rebbe said we're yotze with other things that happen now, which generally speaking, we're living in golus, and many people in their personal lives are crushed one way or another. So you're yotze with these in yonim already. Doesn't chas v'shalom have to mean kipshutay? If someone comes along and says no, it's kipshutay, not realizing Rachman al-Islam, by doing that, they're interpreting that nevuah, at least to themselves, chas v'shalom, in such a way. This is what it says in the Sichas of the Rebbe. So, and remember once a story here in Crown Heights, probably because there are people here sitting who remember it. There was a time where there were a number of incidents that happened. Not good incidents. And I think there was specifically with women, and it happened to a few people. And they wrote into the Rebbe, what should we do? Look, this happened, that happened, the other thing happened. And remember, the Rebbe's answer was, loy lekasher hamu'urois. Don't connect the incidents. Don't make it into a pattern. In other words, if you're going to write that this is a pattern, chas v'shalom, you make it into a pattern. And if we write that it's not a pattern, an isolated incident, not chas v'shalom, something's going on, then that's the way it's going to be. Whatever happened, happened, and it doesn't have to lead to anything else, chas v'shalom, in the future. The same. It means that the inyan and beruchnis depend on us. And if we kind of declare that there's a pattern here, there's a cause here, in a sense, you bring out whatever that could be a possibility, but whatever that possibility is, by speaking about it in such a way, we cultivate it in a sense. We bring it out and make it more pronounced and more open, and then it's more effective. And by ignoring it, it's not that we're denying the reality, but you're not allowing that aspect of it to come out. And therefore, it doesn't take effect. That's exactly what Trachgut Vetzangut means. Trachgut Vetzangut is also not denial. Trachgut Vetzangut means that depending on the way we think, that's the way things happen. Like, for example, with Trachgut Vetzangut is the one who is the original source of this vart is the Tzemach Tzedek. It's based on a story that he was once a chassid, that his son was in a critical condition, and he was hysterical. And one of the older chassidim said to him, I don't understand you. Where's your amunah? Where's your betachin? It says in Gemara that even if there's a sword, chas v'shalom, the tip of his sword by someone's throat, you shouldn't give up. Why are you like this? And he told him, you know what the doctor said, such and such, it's a matter of hours. So he says, go to Lubavitch and get a bracha from the Rebbe. It was Tzemach Tzedek's times. And the chassid said, there's no point because the doctor said it's a matter of hours. So by the time I get to Lubavitch, and the chassid said, I'm sure that the malachim lemaila, who are Rachman al-Islam being mekatek, they'll wait. Just go to Lubavitch. And a friend of his took him and they went off to Lubavitch. And he was fortunate enough that when he came to Lubavitch, he was able to go see the Tzemach Tzedek right away. And of course, he gave the tzettel to the Tzemach Tzedek. And while the Tzemach Tzedek is reading, he's thinking in his mind, who knows if his request is even relevant anymore. And he broke down crying. That's when the Tzemach Tzedek said to him, why are you crying? Trach gut v'tzayin gut. And the chassid said that for the rest of his life, anytime any kind of situation came up, he followed the Rebbe's advice, trach gut, and that changed it. So one of the ways of explaining what's trach gut v'tzayin gut, so it says it's based on what the Baal Shem Tov says. The Baal Shem Tov says, Hashem tzilcha yadu menecha, the Eibishter is our shade. The reason why we describe Hashem as a shade is, the shade represents protection. Protection from the sun, sometimes protection from rain. But the Hashem says the word tzel can also mean not a shade, but a shadow. Hashem is our shadow. What's a shadow? A shadow copies us, copies our movements. The Eibishter copies our movements. And therefore, if we think positive, and we picture in our minds healing, we picture in our minds success, we picture in our minds something good, we create that condition, lamayla. Because there's a word, lamayla, which is called the world of thought, machshava. And whatever goes on my thought creates it up there. And there's a world, lamayla, that's called the world of speech. And whatever comes out of my mouth, in that world, it's reality. The famous story that's brought down Hayyam Yem, that Baal Shem Tov once wanted to show his Talmidim the power of speech, that down here speech is only words, but lamayla it creates. And one time he was sitting with his Talmidim, told them all to put their arms on each other's shoulders, and they had a human chain. And the Baal Shem Tov put his hands on the shoulders of the two Talmidim next to him. And they told him to close their eyes. And they saw the way one person was walking over to another person and viciously tearing him apart to pieces. And they all gasped because they're seeing one person tearing another person apart. They opened up their eyes, and the guy is alive and well. And what it was that one person said to the other person, "I'm going to tear you apart like a fish." So Hashem just showed them that in Olam HaDibur, his neshama tore apart his neshama like a fish. And of course, when something happens in Olam HaDibur, it's more likely to evolve from there to Olam HaMaisa. When something happens in Olam HaMachshava, you create a condition. In that world, it's more likely to evolve from the world of thought to the world of speech to the world of action. On the other hand, if I create in my mind thoughts of positiveness, of bracha, I create that bracha l'mayla. And the Tzemach Tzedek wrote to a certain chassid that the Alter Rebbe was nostalgic. That night, I think it was, the Tzemach Tzedek was davening Meir. And he was davening Meir with a sad tune, with a marashchere diketun, because of the Alter Rebbe's condition. And the Alter Rebbe rebuked him for it. The Alter Rebbe said, "Why are you davening in such a tune? Adrabba, you want some bracha for the Alter Rebbe?" So he said, what it says in the Zohar, that whatever face you show down here, that's the kind of face you show up there. He based it on the pasuk, kamayim aponim el aponim. It's like your face is reflected in the water. That's how what goes on in our thoughts and words is reflected l'mayim. True. The only question is, I'm not chas v'shalom saying anything, but I'm saying, the question is, if maybe it needed to be more people that of chassidim that had that thought in their mind. Could be, if everyone taka would have been 100% that one way, maybe it would have been a different power. It's very possible and very likely. But I'll soon tell you where the difference can also come in. One of the inyanim that are similar to this is actually the story with Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Everyone knows one of the examples the Rebbe gives, that tzaddikim continue to live in this gashmizikal world with their body, is the story of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rabbeinu HaKadosh came back to his family every Friday night. So there's an interesting pirush. There's a sefer written by one of the greatest tzaddikim in the Sephardic world, who was known as Ben Ish Chai. And in his commentary on this Gemara, he says, why taka do we find this by Rabbeinu HaKadosh, not by other tzaddikim? Why don't we find by other tzaddikim? They're also very big tzaddikim, tanoim. And we don't find this inyan that they came back Friday night alive to their families. And he says the reason is because Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Gemara says, that he was the Nasi, and for whatever reason, in that generation, they made the biggest tumult, the biggest commotion, that they want him to continue to live, and they daven, and they want him to live. And it will be unacceptable that anything else will happen. And he said, because the whole generation, every single person generation, was davening Hashem, and they were determined that Rabbeinu HaKadosh has to live, so the Eibishter made it, and the Chitaka happened that way. In fact, in the Gemara, it says something very, very amazing. The Gemara says that they announced, I think it was the day that the crisis was like at its worst point, the day of his Estalkos. They announced, whoever is going to say that Rabbeinu HaKadosh passed away will be stabbed with a sword. Yudokar b'cherem. That's what they announced in the Bismedesh. What do you mean? It means, even after it happens, if someone's going to say that this is what happened, then Rahman al-Slan yudokar b'cherem. And in fact, when it happened, the person who said it didn't use the words that he passed away. He said, Nitzchu areilem hametzukim. In other words, the forces up there, which are the malachim, they wanted him up there. We wanted him down here, and the forces up there defeated the forces down here. He didn't say the words that he passed away. So, what does it mean? It means he's saying clearly that the fact that the Yidden wanted so much that he should live, and they had that amunah that he's going to live, that's what made that he should taka continue to live even after his passing. True, for whatever reason, it didn't happen in a way that it begashmis, in a way that we could see it, he continued to go on. But definitely, he lived in a way which was unprecedented to other tzaddikim. Why? Because of the Yidden. Only his family, right? Not only saw him, it says that he came back to his family, sat there at the table, and he made kiddush. And even there we find how much it depended on, again, on just like here it depended on the klal, that they davened so much, here also it depended on the family. It says in Gemara that what happened was Rabbeinu HaKadosh, before he was nostalgic, said to his children, "Lebonai ani tzarech, I need my children." And he said to them, "I'm giving you instructions. Don't move the table from its place. Let it stand where it always stood. don't move the menorah, the candle, where from its place, and don't move the bed from its place. Everything should stay where it was. And the Gemara says, my timer, why was it so important? And the Gemara answers, because he came back every Friday night. I guess you can probably explain the Gemara literally that when he came back Friday night, he didn't want to have to go look for his menorah, so he told him before. Really, that was so urgent in such a time where he's leaving this world. What would be the problem if he'd come home and they say, oh, we didn't have the table for you? Fine, they'll move over the table. Big deal. Or they'll move it from this place to a different place. I'm sure they wouldn't throw all the tables out of the house. What was the point? The point was, if you do something which indicates that nothing has changed and I belong to this house just like before, I will come back to this house just like before. That's what it says. That they shouldn't move the table and the menorah and the bed from its original place. In other words, their emunah, and there's examples of this, which is by a bris. It says that you have a chair and you say, Zeh kisa shel Eliyo. So it says in the Zohar, if the person pronounces and says, this is the chair for Eliyahu HaNavi, then he comes. If you don't say those words, then he doesn't come. But the word that Eliyahu HaNavi's presence depends on if we say it or not, that's in the Zohar. That's in the Zohar that the father is supposed to be saying at night, at the night of the before the bris, the vachnach. So we see again this inyan that it depends on us. Here it depended on the whole klal Yisrael and Tanz Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Then it depended on his children and so on. Which means that if this inyan has potential to be, and it surely is, but to what extent will it be revealed, will it be open, it depends on us. I saw an amazing letter in Igros Kodesh where a chassid writes to the Rebbe, and seemingly it happened more than once, where they felt that the Rebbe either wasn't answering him, and they feel maybe the Rebbe has something against me, but this was a different letter. This is the Rebbe answered someone, and the person took it as the Rebbe was rebuking them and not happy with them and upset with them and so on and so forth. So the Rebbe writes back that I feel very bad that you took my letter this way. It's not what I meant at all. The Rebbe writes to this person that this is really what I meant when I wrote. And then the Rebbe adds another line and says like this, but it's very painful to see that you're interpreting things in a negative way, because ki yadua, that the way people see things, that's what they're given. In other words, even in terms of the relationship between the Rebbe and a chassid, if you take it in a negative way, that's what you're getting. Now, there is an underlying reality, but if the reality comes out begoli or remains hidden, depends on me. In other words, if I interpret things in a negative way, then being that in my mind I don't see it, it's like the idea of where it says, why to be the simcha when something negative happens. Because when something negative happens, really in this event, there's a bracha. If I loudly pronounce and announce and declare that I know there's a bracha here, and what it looks like on the outside is just a facade, it's not the real thing, it says in Tanya, that causes the bracha to come out in the open. If I say, I don't believe there's a bracha hidden there, I think what I see outside, that's all that there is, chas v'sholem, then that itself causes that the hidden bracha doesn't come out in the open. That's what the mashal is with the hide and go seek story. The story with the Mezritcha Magid, where the Mezritcha Magid said that one time his son, Rav Avram the Malach, who later became a very big Rebbe himself and the Alter Rebbe's Chavrusa, but at the time he was a little child, and he walked into the house crying. And the Magid asked him, why are you crying? And he described how they were playing a game, which we know today as hide and go seek. And he said that there was a boy that was what we call it, and all the kids were hiding. And we're in our hiding places, waiting for him to come seek. And we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. We don't see him looking for us. Finally, after half hour, or whatever length of time, we all came out of our hiding place to find out, where is he? And we realized he played a trick on us. We all went into our hiding places and he went home. So when the Maggid heard this, the Maggid started to cry. Why was he crying? He said that Eibishter has exactly the same complaint to us. He went into hiding. And the reason why he goes into hiding is that we should find him, we should search for him. But what do? He goes into hiding and we go home. We say, oh, he's not here, goodbye, and we leave. In other words, in this game of hide and go seek, so to speak, what's the objective? The objective is to find where the person's hiding. And when you find that the person's hiding, he comes out of his hiding place, and the game is over. Like there's a mashal in Chassidus, there's a similar mashal where a father wants to test the intelligence of his child. Or we can say not only test, but develop the intelligence. And one of the things he does, he hides. If it's a silly child, the child starts crying right away. If it's an intelligent child, they realize that the father's playing with the child, and he starts looking for him. So again, once the child looks all over the place and finally opens the hidden door and finds his father hiding, what does the father do? He stays there. No, the objective has been achieved, and now he comes out of his hiding place. So when the Eibishter hides the bracha, it basically hides it for this reason. He wants me to recognize that there's a hidden bracha there. And as we recognize the hidden bracha, that makes the hidden bracha come out, and whatever is blocking goes away, and the toiv becomes toiv anirav anigla. And that's the whole union of Golos, the whole union of Tzimtzum. The Eibishter created the Tzimtzum, and in this way he's hiding his godliness, and we, through Torah mitzvahs, recognize the godliness. We say there is a godly spark in the water, and there's a godly spark in the potato, and there's a godly spark in the table and the chair. And by doing that, we bring it out, the Golos, and that changes the world. So that's what it means. It's not Chas V'Shalom, there's no reality. There is a reality, but whether that reality will be Begoli or Behelim depends on me. If it's Begoli, Behelim, in my mind. Same thing is Benegeya, specifically, and even stronger when it comes to the subject of Kabbalah Samalchus. We know what it says, Chassidus, Kabbalah Samalchus depends on the Am. And we know by the Rebbe himself, one of the examples that's been talked about a lot is what happened the first year. The first year the Rebbe refused to accept the Nesius, and refused it very strongly. And no matter who came, and no matter who spoke, and no matter what line they used, they could not convince the Rebbe to accept the Nesius. But what the Chassidim did, and there are letters that were printed in that Sefer Yemei Breishis, you see the letters, where in those letters Chassidim are writing to each other, and they say that the only thing to do is to persist, just continue writing letters of Kabbalahs and Nesius that we want the Rebbe to be our Rebbe, send it into the Rebbe, get more people to sign, and that will bring it out. So the question is, what does it mean? I mean, in a normal, ordinary person, you say, I don't want to do this job, but if people ask and beg and plead, it becomes harder to say no, so we get him to do it. You're talking about a Rebbe. By a Rebbe, everything is emes and emes lamita. So if he's for it, why doesn't he do it? If it's not for him, then what does it mean? Then how could people, by insisting, in fact there's a letter that the Rebbe sent, it's very strange because they're very strange, very interesting. The letter was actually sent to the Rebbe. You know, a lot of people wrote to the Rebbe, then people wrote in groups, you want the Rebbe to become Rebbe. One of the people that got an answer from the Rebbe was Rabbi Ginsburg from Machon Chana. And he writes to the Rebbe, I don't know his exact age, but imagine that 1950, he probably wasn't 70 years old. So he writes to the Rebbe, Ingerman, the Rebbe should become Rebbe, and the Rebbe writes back to him that you have an idea what a Rebbe is. You know what kind of kriches a Rebbe has to have? How are you even applying something like this to me? Why are you even suggesting such a thing? How does it even dawn on you to even write such a thing? Which is, by the way, an amazing difference between then and Mashiach. When it came to the subject of Rebbe, the Rebbe would write and say words along these lines that it's not for me. When it came to people speaking about the Rebbe being Mashiach, in those days when the Rebbe didn't allow it, the Rebbe never said it's not for me. The Rebbe always said it's not to be talked about in the public. The Rebbe never, no one will ever find a sicha where the Rebbe would say, how could you even suggest such a thing? Do you know who I am and do you know what Mashiach is? But he did say that with the subject of Rebbe, by the way. I don't know what it was, when it was, in reference to what, and what context. It's very hard to deal with that because we don't know. There are a lot of things that people come up with that you don't know in what context it says. Like one of the famous ones is being used a lot and publicized as a lashon from the Rebbe. Well, the Rebbe writes that it's a mitzvah to have. There's no mitzvah to publicize who is Mashiach, but it's a mitzvah to have Avos Yisroel. I'm sure you've seen this. Sure, very well publicized by certain whatevers. And the question is a very simple question. It says that, first of all, it doesn't say now how to publicize. It says that one of the 613 mitzvahs is Avos Yisroel, but one of the 613 mitzvahs is not to publicize who Mashiach is. In other words, in that context of a 613 mitzvah, it's definitely not part of it. But even that, in what context was this said? Wait a second, what was this answer to? Why don't they publicize who gave the question? What was the question? What was the issue? In fact, as a possibility, the issue was the exact opposite issue. That maybe somebody was publicizing who is Mashiach, and maybe because of that, the one who was in charge of his position decided to fire him, and he wrote to the Rebbe, he's doing something which is not appropriate, and the Rebbe wrote back, it's not a mitzvah to publicize who is Mashiach, but it is a mitzvah to have Avos Yisrael, and don't fire him. I don't know what the question. In fact, I don't even know, even in this tzetl, I don't know what were the words before, what were the words after. I told this story many times. Years ago, when I was in Australia on Shlichus, one of the issues that came up was whether every word that it says in Gemara or Mefarshim is really 100% emes, even in medical issues. And one person who was a medical student was arguing that he found things in Rashi which goes against what medicine says. Which, it depends on your attitude. If you believe in Torah, then you know somehow or other you can reconcile the two things. Or maybe medicine made a mistake. If you don't, you say the opposite. Just last night I was talking to someone, told me an interesting thing that I think it happened in Montreal, where a rabbi answered someone, a reference to a certain medical condition that it says in Gemara, something about that there are strings that go from the eye to the heart. And they were talking about, like, medically we know there's no such thing. There was a doctor in the crowd, and he said, tell me again, what does it say in the Gemara? And he told him, so he said, actually, this goes back a number of years ago, he said, then it was a recent finding that there are certain nerves that do go from the eye to the heart. And this has become now standard procedure to regulate the heartbeat by manipulating the eye one way or another, the eyeball. In other words, there are certain things which you say science doesn't know this. Later they find out, and there's a big long list of these kind of things. In fact, I remember somebody once said that what encouraged him to become Froom was his science teacher in university. Because the first shiur in science that he gave an introduction. And his introduction was, what I'm going to is not emes. These are all theories. It's not, don't take this as the emes. So that was his first thing. If it's not emes, what am I doing here? They themselves say that every month in Dunshi they come up with something new. Yeah? No, it was never publicized. In fact, I'm saying that itself is significant. The fact, usually when there's an answer from the Rebbe, they always write, someone asked this and this, and the Rebbe answered this and this. Seemingly, if we would know in reference to what it was, we would see the answer in totally different, in a different context, which wouldn't be... No, these words could be true, but if you know what context, it has a whole different meaning. That's why I'm giving an example. This person was arguing that Rashi could make a mistake, because in those days they didn't know so much about medicine. And of course we told him otherwise. One day he came and he was so excited. He opens a Rambam and he finds one of the Mefarshim on the Rambam, and it says that Rashi ta'a b'davar pashut kazeh. Rashi made a mistake in such a simple matter. Aha! You see? Okay, we gotta see what it says. So I look inside. I see it says, mamish those words, Rashi ta'a b'davar pashut kazeh. Then I take a look at the next word. I say, could you tell me what's the Rosh HaTevis here, this acronym? Chesvav Lamed Chav, I don't know. Chesvav Lamed Chav means Chas V'Sholem Leimer came. You know, so it's just another word, big deal. But it says, Rashi Tov B'Dover Pashut Kazeh, to say that Rashi made a mistake, Chas V'Sholem, to say such a thing. You leave out that word, you change the whole thing. Absolutely, when you see words of the Rebbe, you have to know in what context it was said, what it said before, what it says after. The Rebbe told the story, so in the Friedrich Rebbe Sichas, one of the reasons, at a certain point, that the Misnagdin came out with a very strong opposition against Chassidus was when a witness testified that he saw the Chassidim eating and drinking on Tisha B'Av, which is one of the things that the followers of Shabtai Tzvi, Lahavdil, did. And the Friedrich Rebbe writes, it was actually true. They ate and they drank on Tisha B'Av. And the person didn't say something which is a lie, said the truth. He just didn't add one detail. That when it happened, Tisha B'Av was on Shabbos. That's all. Just left out one detail. So the same thing here. The Rebbe could say a certain word, but if you leave out one word before or one word after, it can change the whole thing around. So therefore, I don't know that story that you're talking about, when it was said, under what condition it was said, in reference to what it was said, in what context it was said. But these things we do know, what it says. So what does it mean that Kabbalah Samalchus depends on us? And why did the Rebbe refuse? So the answer is the way it's explained in Chassidus, and this is not something which is explained because of situation today. These are in the Maimonim of the Alter Rebbe and the Mittler Rebbe and Tzema Tzedek, all the Maimonim about Malchus. It says that the Malchus in the Melech is there because he's destined to be a king. But the Koyach of Malchus just doesn't surface until the people want it to come out. And the people declare the person as a Melech. That makes it surface. So in other words, when the Rebbe was saying, I don't have it, he really, in a sense, didn't have it to the degree that he needed to have it. Because it was there, but it was behelim. It was in a subconscious place. Could be the Rebbe was aware of it, but the Rebbe knew it's not to the point of his galus and didn't surface to the point that it's necessary to be able to say the first maimer. Exactly. The Rebbe wasn't chas v'shalom playing games with us, but it means that to us that the malchus can't come out until there's a kabbalas of malchus. And the fact that there was one city and another community and consistent and continued, ultimately it brought out that malchus and the Rebbe. So it means that it depends on us, and that's how it comes out. There's a story in Likutei Diborim. I'm saying the Rebbe perhaps knew everything, but the Rebbe, when let's say these words like you have to have these and these things in order to be a Rebbe, what does it mean? It means that the koiches of Rebbe have to reach a certain surface level till they can come into effect, and those koiches were not at the surface level, so the Rebbe didn't say a maimer. In other words, until the malchus of the Rebbe comes to its full hisgalus, it can't be. It wasn't in a certain way right at the moment of Yitzchak immediately, but until the Rebbe accepted officially, it means that it needed all that time, or it needed all that kabbalas amalchus to come out begolim. It's like everything, a lot of things in this world that need time to be cultivated. In fact, I think there's an answer from the Rebbe where someone asked the Rebbe such a question. After the Rebbe accepted the Nesias, he asked the question like, if that's the case, why couldn't you do this months ago already? Something like that. And I think the Rebbe answered that it's known that, I think the Rebbe said that the Iber of certain Neshamas is 12 months. In other words, that it's a process of development, of cultivation. That's really what it means. If that answer, again, is Emes, that's what the answer means. So it's all connected. So that's another reason why it doesn't surface. But I'm just saying, one thing is clear that, and that's the way Chassidim always knew it, that by us accepting the Rebbe and saying we recognize the Rebbe as our Rebbe, that makes it happen. So it's not just something in my head. The reality depends on us. We create this reality, which means the reality is there regardless, but we bring it out begoli. We bring it out to be more begoli. Whatever we know, we can repeat and explain, but what we don't know, to make our own assumptions, how could we say that? There's a similar story. When you look at the story on the surface, it also has very, very strange words, but there's a story in Likutei Diborim about a Fabrengen, and the Friedrich Rebbe says the biggest chassidim were by that Fabrengen, and by that Fabrengen, one of these big, and this was during the Sheva Brachas of the Rebbe Rashab. They were Fabrengen every single day, and there was Simcha, but then one chassid, it was also like a chavrusa to the Rebbe Rashab. He was called the Poltava Rav. And he started to tell a story about a personal yechidah that he had with the Rebbe Marash. And he said that by the yechidah, the Rebbe Marash said the words that Asido a Rebbe is the chassidim. If there's a Rebbe, then there are chassidim. When he said these words, he started to cry. And he was so hysterical they couldn't calm him down. And the other chassidim was screaming at him, what kind of crying? Is the Rebbe simcha now? Why are you crying? They just couldn't calm him down. So he started to sing, to out-shout his crying. So they were singing, and these guys were dancing, and he was sitting by the table, and he was crying. But nevertheless, you're talking about a very big chassid. So finally, after he calmed down a little bit, he said that the Rebbe told me, if there's a Rebbe, there are chassidim. But chassidim the way chassidim are supposed to be. And if chassidim are not the way chassidim are supposed to be, these were the words in the Sikha. Machen ze dem Rebbe ois Rebbe. They undo the Rebbe, so to speak, that he's no longer a Rebbe. Very hard words to hear. What does it mean? But that's what it means. In other words, that the Rebbe's leadership and the Rebbe's malchus depends on us. And chas v'shalom, if we are not in that mode of being mekabel, then we make it more behelim. A Rebbe is a Rebbe. We can't change that, of course. And it's no different than the Eibishter himself. The Eibishter is a melech. And yet we have to say Hashem melech, Hashem molech, Hashem yimlech, and we crown him and we declare his kingdom. We're not going to change it. He's going to be the melech regardless. But whether we accept it and say it or not, that determines how begoli it is in the world, and that'll determine how effective it is in the world. So that's what we see from all these inyanim. So basically, this is the same with this inyan. Side the inyan of Yechi, side the inyan of talking about the Rebbe left, that by speaking this way, and by saying this way, that itself is what makes it that the Rebbe's being with us and present with us in the Gashmistical way is stronger. And that explains the words that the Rebbe uses. In the Sichas, when people would refer to the Friedrich Rebbe as gone, by saying the Shmasa begins in Meraimim and the Shmasa Eden, or Zeichet Tzadik Lebracha, it says in the Sichas, the Rebbe would stop them, and the Rebbe would scream at them. And the words the Rebbe used was, why are you sending him away from us? We need him here, and he also wants to be here. What kind of words are that? Why are you sending him away from us? What, we could send him away? This is the answer, yes, because it depends on us. Like the Rebbe says, it depends how we're going to interpret things. So if a chassid says that the Rebbe is here and the Rebbe was with us, begashmis, that itself has the effect that his presence is here in a more gashmistic way. And if a chassid chas v'shalom declares differently, then chas v'shalom, that causes this inyan to be more behelim. There's a sikha from the Rebbe, let me just conclude here, there's a sikha from the Rebbe in Yud Gimel, Tavshin Yud Gimel, Parshas Eker, where the Rebbe says about the Friedrich Rebbe, he says like this, the Friedrich Rebbe is Zeira Guter, he's very good, and he gives everybody what they want. So those people, that they appreciate the Friedrich Rebbe, and they like to think of him as being in Rekia Shvi, that has the most glorifying place in Gan Eden, for them, the Friedrich Rebbe is over there. See those words? You want me to be there? I'll be there. I'll be seven heavens away from you. And those people, that for them, the Rebbe is here, for those people, the Rebbe is Takahir. And other expressions in the Sikhs, the Rebbe says it depends on you, on the individual. That each individual in his personal world brings it down. So this inyan that, let's say for example, Chassidim come from the whole world to 770. We know there's an inyan of coming here, there's an inyan of going to the oil, but there's a big difference. Going to the oil is also a place where the Rebbe's presence is found. But going to the oil is not making a statement that by me the Rebbe is here. Because by all tzaddikim, and by everyone that's done. That statement is being made by a chassid coming to these aldamas. So basically, it's also interesting, a very interesting thing. One of the things we see a thread through a lot of sikhas and igris is that the Rebbe tells chassidim, I'm sure everyone knows this, that if you look at those inyanim that the Friedrich Rebbe spoke about recently, those are the inyanim which we have to know now more than ever. That's why he spoke about them a few months ago, before Yud Shvat. So from this we also take it that we have to look at what did the Rebbe speak about recently that's relevant to us now. And especially if you see something that he speaks about recently that he never spoke about before. One of the things which the Rebbe speaks about in the recent Sichas before Chav Zayin Adar, and we can definitely say that it speaks about it in unprecedented ways about 770. The Rebbe says this is the Beis HaMikdash, here's where the third Beis HaMikdash will become this gala. And such words about the 770, which all the years the Rebbe never spoke about it. I remember always hearing from the Rebbe, this is the Dal Damas of the Rebbe, the Shver. Such words, but to say that this is the third Beis HaMikdash, this is the place where the third Beis HaMikdash will become this gala, and from here we'll go to Yerushalayim. And this is the place which is Beis Rabbeinu Shebabavel. And all these kind of Asias, this was what the Rebbe spoke about recently, and published it in a separate kuntus known as Beis Rabbeinu Shebabavel. In fact, in that kuntus, the Rebbe says, and what causes that this place should have such a high level of Shechina? The fact that so many people come there. There's a Lashon, Tel Talpias, that the Beis HaMikdash is called Tel Talpias. So the Gemara says, what does Talpias mean? Tel, it's a place that all the Pias, all the mouths of people, or the Yidden, are turned to that direction, they come there. So the Rebbe says, being that this is the place of the Nasi Adar, so people from all over the world come there, the fact that all the Yidden come there, that's what brings the Shekhinah down in such a way. In fact, even the Beis HaMikdash, the Rebbe says, what made the Beis HaMikdash such a level of Shekhinah? Because all the Yidden came there. So Dafke, a few months before Chav Zayin Adar, in a time where there could be a reason and the thought maybe not to come, there's nothing to come to 770 for anymore, Dafke then, the Rebbe speaks about the Maila of 770, and the Maila of as many possible people should come to 770, because that's what allows that level of Shekhinah to come down. So the fact, and the Rebbe says clearly that this is the way it's going to be until Mashiach comes. So that's not even in a doubt. So a chassid comes to the Rebbe. A chassid speaks about the Rebbe in such a way that the Rebbe is here, and the Rebbe is alive, and the Rebbe is with us. It's not just, I'm here to brainwash somebody, just say it a million times. But by saying it, you're causing it to be more begoli, until ultimately, it'll be begoli, the Eina Basa. The day that the Rebbe will become this gala, the Eina Basa Shalanu, there's no question that we'll see clearly that one of the things that were most instrumental for making it happen when it happened was the amunah of chassidim that the Rebbe is here and that he's with us. And that comes from speaking that way, and actions speak louder than words, so therefore chassid comes to the Rebbe's Dalai Lama's, comes here in 770, and that's where all these inyanim come in, the importance of it and the significance of it. And I think this is ready for the Eibishter to hear, that it's 8 years. 8 years doesn't mean that it's 8 years we're doing the same thing. No way in the world is it the same thing. Every day that passes, it's a whole different Nisayan. It's a much different Nisayan. It's like almost of a different caliber of a Nisayan, that it's 8 years from then, and Chassidim are still strong. You know, when the Rebbe said in Basi Lagani that our Avodah is Shtus to Kedusha, Pasha, to do things which other people interpreted as being crazy, we thought it means to go out in the street and stop somebody and say, would you like to put on film? That's crazy. Who would do such a thing? Take a mitzvah tank and go through the streets and, you know, blaring the microphone, telling people to come put on film. It's not normal. Someone told me that he knows a guy who, where he lived, there was a mitzvah tank, used to stop around his block, and he said he used to harass the bachrim. He used to walk over them and tell them, why don't you guys get yourself a job? What are you wasting your life for? What are you doing here? Little did he know that a few years later he'll be doing it himself. You know, he went there to harass him. Eventually, they took care of him. So now he's in yeshiva, now he's doing it himself, he says. I was one of those guys. So the truth is, to the eyes of the world, it's meshuggah. Who does it? Nobody does it. We did it. So we thought that was Ruach Shtus. That's Shtus to Kedusha. And yes, it was Shtus to Kedusha. But the Rebbe made the Shtus to Kedusha become something so normal that now it's normal. And others do it, and it's a pashtu thing to go ahead and do it. And the same thing with so many other things that the Rebbe instituted. And now we're, I guess, at the epitome of Shtus to Kedusha, that there was a Gimel Tammuz, and the Chassidim insist that the Rebbe is here, and the Rebbe is alive. And I told this story many times. For those that say we don't understand it, I'll repeat the story again. A friend of mine said he was on a plane, and a Polish Yid sat down next to him, a Polish Chassid, and he said to him, you're from Crown Heights, Lubavitch. And the next question was the obvious question, so are you one of those Meshugoyim that say that the Rebbe is still alive? He says, yeah. So he says, how could you say such a thing? Explain. I mean, you look like a normal person. Tell me what you guys are talking about. So he says to him, what does it mean when the Gemara says Yaakov Lemes? So he says, you know what? Ich verstehe nicht die Gemara. I think I don't understand that Gemara either. So he says, and what do you do with the Gemara that says, Moshe Lemes? Versteht das euch nicht. It also doesn't make any sense to me. And what about David Ma Yisrael Chai V'Kayam? Yeah, I say it, but don't ask me what it means. So then the Lubavitcher Chassid says to him, you know what? Just add us to the list. You have Yaakov Lemes, Moshe Lemes, David Chai V'Kayam, and Lubavitch say this. Whatever that means, this means. No problem. Just put it over there. So this is Shtus de Kedusha. And on the other hand, the Welt is ready, because you see that when you say Be'emes, not only is Nagei L'mayla, but people are Mekabel. Not only the Mekabel, but they're excited to hear it. They want to hear it. And like someone told me, he was going for business purposes. He was dealing with someone. And the guy says to him, are you one of those people that used to think the Rebbe was Mashiach? So he says, no, I still think the Rebbe was Mashiach. He goes, oh, that's what I wanted to hear. People living in such a time now, especially after the change in history, it's at 9/11, people are confused, people are worried, people are don't know where we're going, what's going to happen with this world. And the message that everything the Rebbe said is emes, and sof kol sof we'll see it in the queen with our eyes of flesh, and the Rebbe is here, and the Rebbe is with us, and the Rebbe is giving us bracha, and the Rebbe is leading us, that's a fact. I mean, I don't know if everyone heard this story, but this is a story that happened not long ago. I don't know if I should mention the names, so because later this goes on the air or whatever, so I'm not going to mention names, but it's a story that I know it happened. I heard it from a person who heard it from the individual that was involved in the story. He was on the plane, and there was a woman sitting on the plane that was telling him that she has a shaykh to Lubavitch, that has a shaykh to the Rebbe, and she told him the fact that she couldn't have any children, and the Rebbe gave him a bracha, and after that bracha she had two children. And she said that one of the children needs a bracha, but now what could you do? Then she went to the Rebbe. And now what could you do? This girl's not well, and what could I do? And he's telling her you can go to the Rebbe now also. And as he was on the plane, he was listening with a Walkman to a Fabrangan. And he says to this woman, is your daughter's name this and this? Because this person's a famous person. She actually wrote up her story in one of the, you know, general magazines. Anyway, he said to her, is your daughter's name this and this? He says, yeah, how would you know? He says, he's hearing on the tape now that the Rebbe is speaking between Sichas to her husband and giving a bracha for this girl. So, if we go out and say what the Rebbe wants us to say, the Welt is ready to hear. And anyway, the Eibishus will help him. We shouldn't have to deal with this subject any longer. And we should have this galus of the Rebbe taken from Yad Mamish. Now, the Gashmias, Kipshute, Lamatam, Asarat Fochim. The Rebbe leads us out of galus. And then the Rebbe will explain to us all these inyanim, what was going on, what was happening. We'll figure it out then.